grandma and your grandma were sitting by the fire. My grandma told your grandma, I'm gonna set your flag on fire. You're talking about hey now, hey now, hey now, hey now. Giacomo Fino Anani.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling. Celebrate good times, come on.
Celebrate hoot. And guys, this is Matt Rogers.
This is Bowen Yang.
And if you listened, if you're a listener of the podcast, you'll know that Bowen and I are in a little bit of an argument right now.
One would call it a feud starring Susan Sarandon and
Jessica Lange. Now, Bowen came for me on the podcast.
Listeners know
the segment I Don't Think So, Honey. And both Bowen and our guest, Chrissy Shackelford, said, I don't think so, honey, Matt fucking Rogers.
You say this as if there is no precedent for it. And you historically on, I believe it was Sam Taggart's episode, came for me and I Don't Think So, Honey. So it's not like this hasn't been done before. You know what I'm saying?
I'm just saying, like, are we on good terms or not?
Well, I don't know, Matt. It seems like we're on great terms, but then as soon as our producer Alex hits record, you know,
Saying I'm playing a role on this podcast? Are you saying I'm not being my real grounded self? Are you saying I'm not bringing the T-100?
You're not bringing the T-100. You're putting on a mask. Bitch.
I am bringing the T-100, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the first film of Terminator, honey. That's me always.
Well, girl, you know what? I'm willing to just keep this ball in the air while we're recording, and if you wanna come for me, bitch. Then stay for me, okay?
Stay for a while. And you, the listener, stay for a while. You better stay for our guest.
Oh, I
love
our guest.
We have such an amazing guest, and it's a first for us. And
we'll get to that first.
We'll get to that in a moment. You know our guest from Cartoon Monsoon, unbelievable, incredible show here in New York, and also his work with Mo Fry Pasek in the group Pasek and Platt, all around the city doing amazing work. One of my favorite duos.
I think
you guys are incredible.
Microphone Scenes, honey.
Yes.
He also is renowned for his gift cards and greeting cards. You can find them at ilovegiftcards.tumblr.com or on his Instagram at IamKingBozo. And you might also have seen him on the special Without Brett Davis as a frequent guest. This one has a screen presence.
He's all over the place. And let me tell you something. He jumps off the screen. He jumps off the stage and he's jumping into your ears right now. Everybody, please, please welcome wonderful, lovely boy, Tim Platt.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
Wonderful,
so exciting.
Lovely boy.
Wonderful, lovely boy. I think that's you.
I'll take lovely boy.
Lovely boy.
You don't want to be wonderful?
Well, no.
Tim has been the self-labeled best boy. And
best
I think
boy.
That's true.
That was, I don't know if that was self-labeled.
Oh, maybe not.
Who called you the best boy?
I know Anna calls me best boy.
I've called you best boy many times.
Maybe it's like a Story Pirates thing, but it's been hurled at me and I've accepted it with open arms.
I think you are the best boy. In fact, I think you're the best boy so much that I'm ready to announce it.
Announce.
Tim Platt is the first straight man to guest on Las Culturistas.
Yes!
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much.
This is unprecedented, honey.
I mean, don't ever say Las Culturistas didn't give you diversity.
No. Finally, we are giving you color and life.
Finally.
And spice with Tim Platt.
Oh, well, I'm incredibly happy to be here. I'm incredibly honored to be here. And I very much appreciate everything that you all do.
Oh,
that's
no,
such
no, no.
a real thing, though.
What?
It's that? Like, it, when I was growing up, like, I was trying to be straight in high school, and I talk like this, like I drop my voice down like this, it's really spoken like a voice is like a little bit lower.
I recently
heard my like 11-year-old cousin doing it, and I was like, I wanted to get down on his level and be like, don't do it.
It's like a young boy thing. It's like the talk lower than you're supposed to talk, or you're like. The idea that you can like fool someone by talking like this if sounds incredibly forced.
Yeah.
And like young I love young boys. I think they're the funniest things in the world.
Because they like have such goofy gay little instincts.
Yeah.
But they
mask them.
They get to a certain point and it's like, no, I like guns and stuff.
They make a decision that intimacy is like a problem. They make it.
That's what it is.
It's an active decision that I think young boys make, and then it will come out, and they'll be like, "Oh no, we can't love each other.
We can't love each other. We can't touch each other." But little boys are always on top of each other.
What you two specifically do, Matt and Tim, you guys will choose to pull out the gravelly, gruff, lower timbre voice, and viscerally, when either of you do it, specifically, it's for you two. Viscerally, it's just. painful for me to listen to, because it's, I don't know why, if it takes me back somewhere, if it takes me back to a certain person.
Honestly, Bowen, I don't really know. Like, it's for real. Like, if that sounds like your insecurity,
disgusting.
I like, very much appreciate that.
No.
But I have to say that, like, your pain is, like, not my fault.
No, it's, like, literally, you know what I mean? Quite honestly, not my problem. No. Literally.
And honestly, if you were, like, in this school right now, like, people would come at you if you came at me in public.
No. Seriously, for real? God. You don't want to, like, honestly do that.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Imagine.
Oh,
imagine.
My God.
That's imagine living like that.
Disgusting.
That's Long Island, though.
Wow.
You Long know, Island. Like, my dad, like, he wants me to, like, be, like, a business major, and, like, I kind of think I want to major in English.
But, like, I don't know. It's like gay. Wow. So now we're talking and we're living in the past. I think this is a great opportunity.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
To ask Tim Platt the question.
Mm-hmm. I love this question
so
much.
This is an essential question. It's, what culture shaped you, Tim? Tell us a little bit about your upbringing. What made you decide that culture was for you?
What made you say, culture, I accept this. Mm-hmm. I want to pursue it.
Can I first say that, before I answer this question, I want to say that, like, as a listener of this podcast, I love this question so much.
It's
and
the
one. First time I heard it, I was a little startled because it's so vast but so specific.
Yeah.
That it's an incredible way to open a conversation. It's just like, I really yes. think that what culture is for you, it's like, it's so
and
it's,
everybody answers it differently.
Yeah.
We've had people talk so about broad. Like where they grew up. Mm-hmm. And just to talk about that. And then some people go directly to like a movie or a television show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very open-ended.
I used to follow up and qualify that question by saying, what movies, books, TV would you watch that shaped you? But I feel like that's even then too specific. And the beauty of the question is that it's so broad and open-ended.
Yes. Yes.
Answer this beautiful question.
I will answer this question. I think the culture, I think the X-Men were like super huge for me. Like comics, comic books and comic strips in general, and then X-Men specifically as like a superhero team were really big for me, and like one of the first things I remember being like, I have to know everything about this.
You read the comic books?
Yeah,
definitely. And you watched the television show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you got into the movies when they came out, for sure.
I did like the movies. I mean, Nightcrawler was my favorite. So, like, X2, I was like, that opening scene. I feel like it's been said before.
It has been said before, and it bothered me because I haven't seen X2.
Still
I've seen all the X-Men
so
except X2, and I feel like that's the one.
Watch, like, the first 15 minutes, and then, like, that's
it's an incredible sequence.
I'll say this. Yeah, the sequence of Nightcrawler like teleporting and is like super cool. Mm-hmm. Everything else is like fine.
Okay. I think the ending is really great.
What happens in the end again?
I mean, I don't want to spoil it. I mean, everyone knows. Jean basically dies. And
Right.
And she comes back in the next one as the Phoenix, right?
But you know what? Here's my thing. Like, I love Jean Grey. I love the Phoenix saga. I love it. But I think it takes over too many narratives in the X-Men universe.
And the comics.
The whole, every X-Men property, like, there'll be a Phoenix storyline and just consumes every other story.
Right.
Which is, it's not that it's a bad story, just like...
It's weird that it's the one that they chose.
Yes.
That's kind of like when you hear that when there's a big superhero movie coming out and you finally hear the announcement of who the villain is going to be, you're like, okay, cool. That's what we're getting. Like when Spider-Man 3 came out with the last one with Tobey Maguire.
And
they were
Venom?
Like, it's going to be Sandman.
And Venom.
It was Sandman and Venom.
And the
then,
Lizard.
Was
the Lizard? Lizard was
no,
Spider-Man
no, no. Okay,
2.
It was Sandman and Venom. And I was like, Sandman and Venom?
Yeah.
Really?
That was one of the worst movies I ever saw.
Terrible.
I remember seeing it in theaters in college and being like really excited. That was when I was still excited about comic book movies.
Yeah, I went
to see it with my friends. I like made my friends go see it. And I remember being in the theater and like being so pissed.
Yeah, the energy just dropping.
Yeah, like slowly through the movie, I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
This
I
sucks.
Think there's one good scene in it, and it's the last scene when Kirsten Dunst is singing, I'm through with love, don't let it start again. And she's singing in the bar because she like her career hasn't worked out that well. And like then, Tobey Maguire walks in and they see each other and they just start to slow dance. And I did think that was a really nice, pretty scene. And I actually think it's a very fitting, nice way for that canon of
yes,
of that Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst Spider-Man movie trilogy to end.
Wasn't she in that movie? She was in, what play was she in? She was
Oscar
Wilde.
Yeah, The Importance of Being Earnest.
Which I love that play. And she's in that. And I was like, why is this play in this movie? Yeah. It just felt like a weird play.
His voice alone inspires someone with absolute credulity.
Oh mm-hmm. my God, Matt. I think Kirsten Dunst is sort of the unsung.
I'm really proud of myself.
Is the unsung hero of that trilogy.
100%. Kirsten Dunst is one of my favorite actresses ever.
Full stop. Yeah.
Full stop. Hmm. Were you a Kirsten Dunst boy?
You're either a Kirsten Dunst boy or
you're not.
It's the dichotomy.
I don't have a problem with her.
Yeah. But you just don't care either way.
I guess, you know what? I guess she always does a good job. I can't think of a movie I've seen her in where I've been like,
fuck her.
She sucked.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Wow. I'm a Kirsten Dunst boy.
Wow.
Yes,
you heard it.
That's
here
the
first.
Title of the episode.
Wait, I have a question. Okay, so this is my roommate Mike Spence, good friend of the pod, listener of the pod, is also really grew up on comic books. And mm-hmm. this is something that I, as a kid, wished I could access, wished I could be, because love just the artwork in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I feel like I just didn't know like where to go.
I'm surprised about that with you. I would imagine that you're so visual.
I was definitely, I love to draw. I loved anime shows, mm-hmm. which is it's its own little sort of different subculture, but you know, separate from comic books, like American comic books. But I never knew like where to go. I still feel like I don't. Like, where do you go?
I feel like
did you go?
When I was a kid, okay. Well, I will say that when I was a kid, like with X-Men, like those types of comic books, I didn't know how to get there. There was used to be like a mailing service where they would mail you stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. I had that, and like I guess I would go to like bookstores, and then but finally, a comic book shop was like when I was in high school, and I was like, oh wow, there's all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. But I remember I read more strips. Like my dad had these old Calvin and Hobbes and Peanuts and like Doonesbury and Bloom County and like all that like. I always loved those because those were just like around. But like to go to a comic shop is like, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of like going to a record shop for the first time. Where you enter a world of knowledge.
It's too esoteric. It's like, right.
It's incredibly esoteric.
And also the people that are into comic books are so like, I'm into comic books and like, it's kind of like when someone's like into jazz music. It's mm-hmm. like you can't be half into it and expect to talk to people that are like in comics. They're like, they know everything, and it's like an intimidating world for me, almost.
Did you know that I was a very serious jazz guitar player in my past?
When?
No. You don't know about this?
No,
I didn't know that. Tim.
Okay.
As he's unbuttoning his shirt.
Yay, you little sexy boy.
I'm getting excited, so I just
Dunst
felt like...
Boy.
I'm a Kirsten Dunst.
Yummy.
So when I was in a when I was in like middle school, I started playing guitar, and the jazz band was like the cool for me. It was like the coolest thing in our school. It was like high schoolers, the jazz band. They were so cool. Mm-hmm. And
I'm sure they were. Yeah, I believe you.
Well, actually, did you ever see Dear Evan Hansen?
No,
I haven't seen
it
yet.
I want to see it
then
so badly.
This isn't a spoiler.
You've seen it?
I have seen it.
Wow.
So the writer was the older brother of one of my best friends in high school.
Oh.
And so a lot of the stuff in that show, like, I felt very much like, oh, there's like reference points I see here. And there's a moment where he's like, oh, like, hey, like, I like you in jazz band. I love jazz. Well, not jazz, but like jazz band jazz. Where just like, I know what you're talking about.
Oh, I saw a clip of this. Yeah.
It's in the Wading Through the Window conversation.
I've been listening to that nonstop on Spotify.
It was a great time. I've been obsessed with it.
It was that good, huh?
I really liked it. I really liked it. And generally, if it hooks me, I'll like listen to it a lot. And the music's really sticky. Like
sticky music.
Yeah, that's good.
I liked it. Mm. But I bring that up to say that like that was like the I like jazz, but jazz band jazz, which is saying like you like sort of like pseudo jam band stuff that like has a jazz. Yeah. Anyways, I was really obsessed with that. And like I became a very into jazz person.
Yeah.
But and then when they played a lot and practiced all the time, and then I went to college where there was a music conservatory that I wasn't a part of, but I was like, oh, here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna like go to the college and I'm gonna practice a lot and I'm gonna be in the conservatory too, and I'll be like a jazz band.
Yeah.
That's what I'm gonna do. But then I got really intimidated because of all these people. I was like, oh, you are all true
serious
musicians
people.
And I am not. And then I broke my finger so I couldn't practice it for like a year.
Oh wow.
And then I was like, well, yeah, I'm really out.
That's really interesting because I
feel
like
very similar to the comic book thing, I think.
But I think so too.
Yeah. Any obsessive culture.
It's if you can name one thing and then someone's like, oh, well, if you like that, then how about that? And if you know that, then you're like in. And if you don't know that, they're like, oh, right.
It's like the way people feel about improv.
It's the way people feel about anything. Yeah. Like, yes. It's the way people feel about sports or like... like guys asking girls, like, "Oh, if you really love football, then name like the, the team in this year." It's like that kind of thing,
You just did the low voice thing, by the way.
Oh, wait, that was my paltry attempt at it. But what's up, Tim?
I just do think it's funny that some, if you really like football,
but guys really do ask that, like just like try to like test you on that stuff to women specifically who say, "I like football." Like, I feel like that's
true.
A thing.
I think that is a thing.
No, this is but Tim's like intimidation of. This like more what he thought was more legitimate is sort of like maybe Matt, do you feel this way about like how you ended up sort of going into and this sorry this is getting very inside baseball with our pasts, but like did you feel that way going into like things like NYU reality show where it was like I'm not a real actor?
So yeah, so I went to school and wasn't studying acting or writing at all. I wanted to be a journalism.
Oh, I knew that.
I was like, basically, I was accepted into the school, and I was going to be a journalism major. And then, yeah, just honestly being around people that were passionate about something made me realize, oh, my God, wait, I've been passionate about this all along, and that's what I wanted to do all along.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then it is really hard to get over that thing of, like, but I'm not as good as them.
It's imposter syndrome.
Or mm-hmm. I feel like just because I like something doesn't mean I should do it. And also, even if I am good enough, how would you go about getting into that position? And it gets really hard to ingratiate yourself in something that you love and might have a passion for, but just other people have already, you feel like they have a head start on you.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a lot of college kids out there that, and that's what college is for, is to find what you want to do and like really get into it. But a lot of people think, well, that's not my major, I can't do that. Or they think, it's my second year, a third year, a fourth year of college, and I haven't done that. That means it's over for me.
Or even the idea that, like, you have to enjoy something, you have to be a master at it. Or enjoy something, you have to, like, you have to judge your connection with it, competency in it, with other people's view of it. It's like, I don't know. There's, like, so few things I feel like I like just because I like to do them.
Right.
That are, like, devoid of value judgment and comparison.
It's all about faking your way into everything anyway.
Right.
Because you have to realize, like, those people that you're thinking about and talking about, like, most of them just faked their way in and just believed and believed and believed hard enough. I mean, the way I got into shows at NYU, because like, I really wanted to perform, was just convincing myself that I could do it.
Yeah.
Like, and maybe that's not for everybody, but I think so much of it, you can achieve so much by, like, just visualizing. I think I don't know,
but then there's that lingering thing of once you've like overcome that like first little mental barrier of entry to say like I can do this, I'm gonna do it. Like I felt like that as like a chemistry major being in the improv group and saying, well, everyone else is in film or in drama and I don't know if I'm
and therefore there's a ceiling for me.
Yeah,
but you know what, so I was a Latin major in the improv group,
right?
And, and I remember being like, oh, like maybe I want to do, you know, like Tim, like you've always wanted to act, like you know that, you've set up, you just didn't do it in high school, like you've always wanted to, and now like these people kind of are and like you're liking this, so like why don't you go for it. And then like I met people who are actors like at my school, like in the acting program, and I was like, I just hate. I kind of regret that because I was being judgmental, and I could have like done plays that would have been fun, but I was straight up like I had that imposter syndrome. Then I saw like performance and I was like, I don't like this feeling.
Thing is, it's like, yeah, I mean, and that's another thing, it's like you're not really in the community you want to be in, or like you don't really do it yet, and so you dip your toe in it, and the very first person you meet or the very first experience you have can be like a defining experience. Like, and that's with everything. I mean, that's why I think when some people anyway, when they attempt to do something and they fail the first time, it's like, well, I'm bad at I can't do that. And I feel like that's like, it's insane to believe that you could just succeed on your first time doing anything anyway.
Right.
It's how I feel about push-ups, because I used to be so bad at them. And then I just started being like, Tim, like, you can do push-ups. And so now I do push-ups every single morning.
And then you really do get better at them.
You do get better at push-ups.
And I know you were saying that as a bit, but like, that's true.
No, everyone that's listening,
I appreciate how that you... I appreciate how you responded to
that. And also, I think that brings health and fitness into Las Culturistas. And I really hope that everyone listening right now just gets down right now while you're listening, even while I'm saying this right now, just get down and do 10.
Do 100 push-ups.
Just knock 10 out.
Split them up into fifths. So you do 20, 20, 20.
You know what? Throughout the rest of the podcast, I'll remind you that it's time to do another 10. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the podcast, you'll have done 100, guys. Mm-hmm. So and then you can say you did 100 push-ups today. No one ever said you had to do them all at once. It's a common misconception. I'm a fitness guru now.
All right. Wow. This is a bold new direction.
Hey, get down and do 10, guys. This is one.
Okay, so but you're pulsing this out. You're doing tenths. So you're going to have to do this nine more times.
I would say don't worry about me, Bowen. I would say don't worry about me okay. at all, ever.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Okay, there's lots of tension.
A lot of tension.
Culture.
So, Jim. Okay, so comic books. And then comic would you books. Say that that's like, I mean, it's hard to pin down one thing.
There were a few things. I mean, I feel like comic books and comic strips, I feel like my parents would play musicals in like car rides. Mm-hmm. And that was a big thing, like singing along to musicals and car rides. Mm-hmm. So I like musicals. I'm not like obsessed, but like the older I get, the more I'm like, no, I really like this.
Yes.
I also like loved like comedy albums. Like I'd go to sleep listening to like the albums I listened to going to sleep were a lot of Bill Cosby albums, a lot of the 20,000-year-old man, the Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner thing.
Yes,
Margaret Cho.
Oh my god, I used to love Margaret Cho in high school.
I loved her. I listened to Dave Barry tapes too. Do you remember Dave Barry?
No,
I don't know.
He was like a dad who like wrote like a comedy column for like The Washington Post magazine or something.
Oh,
like that.
Cool. I probably read an interview of his or something.
It was some book. But yeah. So I feel like listening to stuff was really big for him.
Yeah, yep. Oh, wow. I definitely, Margaret Cho was a big one for me. And also I listened to I'm Still Here, Damn It by Sandra Bernhard.
Oh, cool.
You ever listen to that album? You ever listen to any Sandra Bernhard?
No, I'm not.
Tim, I think you would really like her. She was like real performance art. Like, she was like, it wasn't stand up. It was like, sometimes she would just break out into a song.
Oh, I love that.
Mm. You should listen to that. And also, everyone at home, like, that's a fun little throwback comedy performance album that you should check out is Sandra Bernhard. I'm Still Here, Damn It.
Was she on the Larry Sanders Show a lot?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I think I'm thinking of the right person.
Yep. No, she was big. She was big time, like, a long time ago. I think she did a couple of Scorsese movies. And she had, like, she played herself on Will and Grace.
Oh, wow.
Years
she's
later.
One of those.
Oh, wow. They were like, because Will and Grace were like looking at Sandra Bernhard's apartment, and they were like, we can't believe it's Sandra Bernhard's apartment. And then hilarity ensued.
I feel
like comedy. If you can believe it.
I want to see that.
I feel like comedy albums were like a big blind spot for me. I'm ashamed to say the first like full length album I listened to is, can you guess it?
Dane Cook?
Yeah.
You know what? I liked him. Oh, I mean, I was like 14 to 15.
Loved him.
That, BK Lounge.
That snake BK bit. Lounge. He has a snake bit that really connected to me where he like pretends to be a snake and then just goes like, oh, yeah, you know what? That's my thing. Yeah, you know what? And then his teeth are out and they're big. Like, I want that. And him saying, like, I want what a snake has. I remember that being a big moment for me. I was like, oh, fuck.
Dane Cook never had jokes. He just had like little snippets of like phrases that somehow he would deliver and land and it would be successful. And he was actually very skilled in that regard. Like somebody shitting the coats is still hilarious to me.
Yeah. He also was an amazing performer.
Yeah.
He was a great live performer. Like you can hear in his voice when you're listening to him on an album that he's just killing the audience. I remember that was like all we listened to in high school. And then, when he started to do he had like a couple movies,
Employee of the Month.
Oh, God.
Which I saw.
Good luck, Chuck.
Yeah.
But also, the last I heard from Dane Cook, he was talking about like how he was absolutely killing the game in terms of like he fucked a lot of groupies on the road.
Of course he did.
Like, he was talking about how like that's how the reason Good Luck Chuck was a thing, because he was just getting so much ass. Like, he just talked about, and it was fascinating to me. I'm like, apparently just like, every single new city just fucking. And then I'm thinking, is that how it is? Like, for these people that are on the road, like,
I mean, I don't know. He, like, had stadiums. Like, he was, like, doing, wasn't he, right?
Yeah.
I don't
know. He had stadiums for sure.
like,
he was kind of like a little rock star there.
Well, no, it's like early days.
Tim!
I just like, you know, like I like that Snake bit, and like I'll give it to him that he's like a talented performer, but like I don't like
his legacy,
you know?
Is not his good. You know,
his legacy is I guess a shameful one would be not fair, right? That wouldn't be fair.
It's not well, no, shameful wouldn't be unfair to me, but it's also probably like not the right. It's like shameful is also being too generous with his legacy. Yeah.
It's just like looking back and remembering that Ashley Simpson was a huge pop star. It's like, oh, that's where we were in terms of like mass appeal, bad taste at that point. Yeah. It was just like we all accepted something at that time. We all left at something at that time, which now we're looking back and we're like, huh.
That makes me think of, have you seen the Backstreet Boys documentary?
No, I just talked about this the other day off the air with Chrissy.
Have you seen it?
I have seen bits and pieces of it, but the bits and pieces I've seen were like not fun to watch. They were sad.
And you have not seen it.
I have not, but I've heard.
You should really
hear
it. It's really cool. Yeah. It's really cool. And like into what we're talking about, it is, they're pretty open about it. They're like, we were the biggest band in the world.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then we weren't, you know, and now we're adult. And, I mean, they were adults then. Right. Some of them were, but some of them weren't. You know, it's like them reckoning with that idea that we're talking about, that like they could have been this monumental thing in culture, and then they are just not.
Yeah.
And I think it really, I think they come off looking very good in that.
Oh,
like,
do they? Okay.
I think so. I think like they clearly have like issues. They clearly have, like, you can't be not emotionally, go through the emotional ringer doing that kind of experience, especially at that age. Howie D, I think, is a psychopath.
Yeah.
But like,
oh God. Backstreet Boys. I mean, come on.
I think AJ was like a sex addict and also an alcoholic. And I think Nick Carter was molested by their manager. Yeah, I mean, that, don't they cover that? And do they allude to it?
They allude. They make. I think they were not allowed to talk about stuff.
Uh-huh.
I think they are contractually not allowed to talk about stuff because they will say some very like political things where they go, yeah, and you do some things that make us very uncomfortable. And there's one moment where Kevin's just like, he allowed me to quit my three jobs and follow my dreams. And for that, I'll always be grateful.
Wow.
Like a very sort of like,
They have to walk it back. See, oh my God.
I don't think they walked it back, but they just said they were, it was clear that the shit went down, but they were just like, we're not going to talk about it.
Because he was also the manager of, I think, NSYNC, and I think he discovered Britney Spears.
Yeah, what was his name? Just
Lou Pearlman.
Yeah, Lou Pearlman. And he passed away a couple years ago, didn't
he?
This year, I think.
He's not around anymore, but he was also in prison for a long time for embezzlement.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like not a good guy. And the story goes that he molested the Carter kids.
Oh, no.
And that the mother found out about it, and then it was like, it was a whole nightmare.
Yes, I remember these headlines.
He was like a sicko.
That's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
But speaking of, it's so funny, Backstreet Boys are just sort of like creeping back into the consciousness. Today I just saw a headline that was talking about how Brian wanted to perform at the inauguration.
What?
And then oh my God, and then Matt and I were in Philly this a weekend ago, and then there was this club where there was this giant screen and they played Backstreet's Back, the video, and I was drunk, so I might have just like,
Am I sexual?
Remember that line?
Yeah, but I was just so receptive to this video again, and I was like, you know what? This is one of those first music, like one of those first modern pop videos, post 90s that was just like very stylized.
Yeah, that was a cool video.
It was
a cool
ridiculous. Video. It was stupid.
It was stupid now, but like one of them.
He was like, oh, he's a wolf.
Why was
he's a mummy. Dracula. That's why it's fun.
Here's the thing, like, I don't get that. None of them were like sexy fucking, like sexy monsters. Like he was a mummy. Like he looked like a mummy.
No,
I
total.
Think,
I don't
think
get
that they
it.
Were sexy, Tim.
But I don't. No.
Wait, Tim just blasted through the ceiling. I was going to say, but no, okay, this is, Backstreet Boys have this very special personal meaning to me. And this is why. I sent my very first email to the Backstreet Boys fan page.
You had never sent an email before?
I never sent an email before. I technically was not through
my
account.
For those of you at home, Bowen does send a lot of emails now. So this is like the beginning of something.
And I've been told I'm very good at sending them. But it was just like my first email, just typing this out and being like, wait, this goes to them, like through this thing called the internet.
Did they respond?
It was an automated response, but I, as a kid, thought it was like them actually reading my thing and being like, hey, thanks so much for reaching out to us. And I was like, wow, like Nick Carter saw my message. which is so funny and insane. And why did no one clock that then and there to be like, that kid, that 6-year-old is gay? Or, you know, 8-year-old.
Who would be clocking that?
Well, I don't know. Things happen when you're young, and then you look back and you're like, holy shit. Yeah. Like, when I was 10 for my 10th birthday, my parents gave me tickets to the first concert I was ever going to go to, and it was Mariah Carey. Mm-hmm. And I screamed, I think, for like 45 minutes.
That's a long time to scream.
And like was like jumping for joy.
Wow.
Because I was going to see Mariah Carey in Madison Square Garden.
I, you guys have talked about Mariah. I don't know. Actually, you know what? I don't want to enter the Mariah Carey conversation.
No, we
don't
have to, I want to hear this. What is it, Tim?
Because I know you all like you have all come out to say that you are.
We're Mariah apologists.
You're apologists for that moment.
For that moment, and I'm just. I will say I'm a neutral. I'm basically like
I got angry texts based about on that. Zero.
About who?
I got a about, text about from what? A couple listeners saying no, Mariah was wrong.
Oh no!
I just.
Here we go. Him.
Well, I'll say it.
Here we go. Come on, Tim. Say it.
Start the fire.
You know what? If you don't go to soundcheck, then like
no.
Then if you don't go to soundcheck,
allegedly
then, like,
she
that's
did.
Not, she did, and she went to no. Here's what happened. She went to soundcheck. The producers kept pushing back the soundcheck, and she had to be somewhere else. No. Her soundcheck was for 3:30. The producers kept her in a waiting area, and she didn't go on until 5:00. And she only had 15 minutes to do shit. And then they were like, "Okay, we gotta move on at 6:00."
See, I heard she didn't even go to the soundcheck. That's what I heard.
I think two things. One, there's a lot of explanations from a lot of different sources. And the second thing I think is, I don't fucking care because it was funny.
Okay, I'll.
It was funny.
Can I tell you that one of my favorite like argument lines is I don't care, I like it, because I feel like there's such an impulse to just like okay, it usually comes down to this. We're like so like I don't eat meat right now. I don't call myself a vegetarian because like if it's free, I'll eat it. You know, if someone's giving me leftovers, I'll eat it. Like cool, I like it. Why people normally don't eat meat? You know, whatever. And in my mind, like it's hard to argue against the idea that like the culture of meat is bad for the world. You know, and like bad for your body, but that's a different argument. But the idea that like oh yeah, it's bad. You know. It's bad. Environmentally, it's bad. I think it's hard to argue against that. And I've always think it's interesting where people are like, well, I'm not going to argue against that, but I'm going to say fuck you rather than you're right, but I don't care. I eat meat because I like it. Like, I think that is like a fine. I think it's a fine stance.
Yeah, you don't need to win.
Yeah, just to
I'm
say,
fine being wrong and also like
be
enjoying
like,
it.
I don't care. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Not to say that this argument is akin to
no,
that.
No, 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 no. I 100% agree with you. It's like, you know what it is? It's like Facebook culture and comment culture. It's like, ooh, like we're all lawyers on the internet.
It's interesting, though. It's like, where do you... It's
we
like,
are lawyers.
It's like, I feel like that is a great argument and a great sort of relinquishment of argument, I guess. But then like I feel like that has to match in severity. It's like, okay, well, if I still eat meat despite all these horrible things like surrounding food culture, then and I don't care, then that's fine. But also then it's like, well, what if you like wanna like what if you want to fucking like choke a dog in the street?
I think that that's just like decorum and knowing that that's different.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I also think I'm really intrigued by this now because it's a really fun way to get back at the person who's yelling at you for eating meat.
Yeah.
It's like, well, just so you know, I don't do this because of the, you know, environmental things, blah, 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 blah. And you just say, I'm like, okay, yes, I totally understand. I still definitely am going to do it because I like cheeseburgers and that's something I was raised with and I'm not going to change my diet. But thank you for what you've said. They'll just be like,
yeah. But you know, the thing is, I appreciate that more than the attitude of being like, well, I'm going to eat two for you then.
Yeah.
You know,
that sort of
spiteful comeback of like, well, you don't? Well, I'm going to eat so much now. It's like, I don't know.
It does remind me of a great Margaret Cho, though, from one of her albums.
Which one?
Which is... Vegetarians are so mean because they're hungry. I love it. She, again, another stand-up who was just an incredible performer, and you could tell because there would just be these long silences and the audience is dying and me at home listening off my, like, I don't know, what was it at the time, like Kazaa. Like, I would just die as well, laughing, imagining whatever she was doing.
I feel like my parents took me to see her at some point.
Oh, really?
Well, those are cool parents.
But you know what? I don't remember. I don't, like, I feel like I have a glimpse of a memory. Because I was like, I was very young when I was listening to these comedy albums. I was like, really sleepless in them. So they knew I liked them. Maybe. I don't know. Oh, I have a glimpse. Cool. Maybe they took me to a different show, but I feel like I saw Modern.
You felt so connected to the material that you felt like you were in the room.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, there is her Carnegie Hall album is truly just one of the best.
I think my favorite one is I'm the One That I Want, and then there's also Notorious C.H.O., which is
the
Martin really,
Carnegie Hall. Yeah.
Really. Oh, that's the one at Carnegie Hall. Yeah. It's really good.
It's just all of Carnegie Hall silent, listening to this one Asian queer woman on stage. That's crazy. And just the whole visual of stand up is in like those giant theaters is still amazes me. It's like, oh, everyone's just listening to one person talk, which is
pretty cool.
Fantastic. It's unnatural.
I think it's
unnatural. It's something I think about when doing stand up where I'm like why is it like equated to like going to the gym? People talk about you going, Mike, you gotta get up there.
Yeah,
you know, like
why
is there that sort of like rep, you gotta get your reps in.
Right.
And I think it's because like it is an unnatural state. Like you having all the attention of people around you, unless like you have great like historically. Actually, I'm not gonna go historically because that's me waxing poetic. But I think it's unnatural.
Yeah.
And so like you have to build up a tolerance to that form of attention, I think.
Right.
To have same thing as acting, I suppose, but
It's
something that we've found out. You know, putting someone in front of everyone else is something we've found out. It's not something we naturally
do. It's something, oh, I love it. Or it's something we found out.
Or is it because we found it out? You know what I mean? You have to wonder, is it part of human nature to entertain each other?
Tell stories.
Because we've been doing it for hundreds and thousands of years.
Oh, we're getting real Neil Gaiman right now.
Come on, baby.
Oh,
love
I don't
your
read
Neil
no Neil
Gaiman.
Gaiman
on my tiny heart.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know where that came from.
Should our listeners be doing push-ups right now, man?
Oh, yeah. You should probably drop down for another 10, guys.
So we're at 20.
Yeah. Oh, this actually made me think, you know what's even more fucking unnatural, which every time I do it, I come out of the room and I'm like, that was garbage and everyone knows it's garbage, is auditioning.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Auditioning is the most unnatural thing.
The stupidest social transaction
It's
ever.
So insane. Yeah. And just also like, just as a human thing. And I think about this more than anything else. I never think about performing as like an unnatural human thing. But whenever I audition, I'm always like, we shouldn't do that because we aren't supposed to do that as humans. Like it's so bizarre to me.
I think that about flying on a plane.
Yeah, well, we're not supposed to be up there. We're not. You're not supposed to be up there.
I guess shouldn't
be up there.
I guess that's why all those bits became a hack, because it was a thing where it was like, oh, well, we had to explore this thing where we shouldn't be. You know, it was like a common insanity.
Me in the core of the earth. You don't see me pitching a tent in the core of the earth.
Okay, what are you? Thank you, Matt.
You don't see me doing that.
What bits are you talking about?
Never
will. You know, like airplane bits. Or like,
oh,
you know, like.
Sure. That's exactly why.
Yeah, that's why you saw a real dip in airplane bits in the past 10 years.
This reminds me, because last time I was on an airplane, Love and Friendship was one of the movies that we had the option of watching. This reminds me of my first Las Culturistas beef.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I feel like I have to bring it to the table, right?
Yeah, bring it forth. Come forth, Tim.
Matt, you do not like Colin Firth.
Mm-mm. No, I
don't. Never understood this.
I think he's a fucking piece of poster board.
What?
Sorry about it.
He is Mr. Darcy.
Give me Colin Farrell every time. Give me Hugh Grant shivering and shaking. Hugh Grant drenched, wet, and cold, doing anything over Colin Firth fully dry in front of a camera.
Okay, so let me first make this personal for a second. All right, I'm going to make this emotional and personal. So my mom would make me and my brothers watch these Pride and Prejudice movies.
Yeah, sure.
I
hear he's the definitive Mrs. Darcy.
Mr. Darcy.
He's the definitive Mr. Darcy, yes. He's the definitive Fitzwilliam.
Yes.
We like watched them all because our mom like made us, and then we grew to like become obsessed with these like Pride and Prejudice movies. And Colin Firth is just like, he's electric in that. He's so good. He's like when he comes out of the pool and he's like his shirt's off and he's all like he's nervous. I believe it.
Mm. Maybe it is the fact that I haven't seen those movies.
You got it. They're so good.
I haven't seen the Pride and Prejudice movies, and apparently that's like. Colin Firth's like hallmark and like his legacy project is those Pride and Prejudice movies.
He's
I haven't seen them.
He's just very, just classically British.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess. Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I don't really respond to the British
Sensibility
in that regard. The period British thing, I'm never going to go out of my way.
Oh, see, I love that. Like, sort of
like The Crown, I couldn't give a fuck.
That, like, Jane Austen style, like, proper.
Like, if I breathe too hot, I faint.
That's sort of like, well, the master did bespeak tenderly upon brows.
Yeah. His voice alone inspires one with absolute.
Yeah, exactly. There's this one line from the Pride and Prejudice series that, like, I get, like, looped
it's this.
In my brain.
Mr. Darcy.
No. Okay, so Elizabeth is with the Bingleys, and Miss Bingley goes, Miss Elizabeth Bennet is a great reader, and she enjoys nothing else. And Elizabeth goes, I deserve neither such praise nor such censure. I am not a great reader, and I enjoy many things.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That exchange, I'll get, like, looped in my head.
That's very Tim Platt.
Wait, can we say that Elizabeth's response, just word for, I just want to internalize this.
I deserve neither such praise nor such censure. I am not a great reader, and I enjoy many things.
That's
wow.
Pretty good. Neither such praise nor such censure. Beautiful. I mean, come on, the language, mama. Matt, you need to appreciate language. You're a writer.
I appreciate Jane Austen. I think she's wonderful. I get the stories. I understand. I just would never seek those things out. Like, I tried to watch The Crown, and because everyone's talking about it, and I was like, if I have to watch another fucking movie watching an old British man cough, I'm gonna fucking lose it. I get it,
Matt.
They're all sick.
This is it's the same.
They're
man.
All sick.
You need to watch.
I get it.
Wait, Matt. You need to watch Fleabag. Have you seen Fleabag yet, Tim?
I have not seen Fleabag.
Oh,
is it? It's an Amazon show.
It's on Amazon.
Yeah,
it's
I haven't seen any Amazon thing. I don't have Amazon. I don't have Amazon. I've never seen any Amazon thing. You can reference an Amazon thing. I haven't seen it. Okay, and I won't see it.
All right, Tim. Okay. Hey, everyone. If it's time to drop down and do another 10.
Pause.
Five.
I think you've earned five this time. You've been doing such a good job, so we're just gonna do five
this
time.
Well, let's just say five is the requirement. If you want to do five more and push yourself, that's fine.
But also listen to your
this
body.
This throws off the count by a lot, I'm just saying.
What?
Like, we're either at 25 or we're at 30.
Well, I think that we should do 10.
I think five.
Okay. All right, well then do between 25 and 5 and 10, bringing you up to 25 or 30.
Whatever. If you're only going to do 5 now, you got to do 15 later. So
I just want to say one thing, Matt. I think it's patently unfair for you to sweep an entire nation's culture. We're talking about culture. You're willing to throw
I'm
an
not...
entire nation's culture under the bus because you don't like Colin Firth. That is unfair. You need to give Fleabag a chance. Oh, this is getting me fired
up. It's not
that
I don't like British things in general. It's that the kind of period British stuff I don't care for. Okay, except Downton Abbey because it was soapy in a modern way.
I gave up on that show.
See, I fucking loved it.
I liked it. Know where I gave up on that show?
When everyone died.
When
28-year-olds were dropping like flies.
I gave up on the moment when what's her name? Fuck.
Mary.
When the rape moment. The rape moment is what.
Oh,
because I felt like.
Ew. Yeah.
I just felt like this is not this. It felt like this was
gratuitous.
There's an article about this recently. Where
oh
like,
no,
oh,
not Edith. It was
what's her name?
Yeah, the blonde Anna.
Anna. Yeah, yeah. It felt like a moment where it's like this doesn't feel like it was meant for any reason than to like throw some. It felt cheap and it felt like bad. Mm. And I was I don't want to.
You know, we talked to Beth and Sarah from Reductress about this when they were on about Westworld, about the. And I talk to a lot of people that are like, you know, Westworld, I'm not going to watch it because it feels a little rapey to me. And we were talking to them about how, you know, that kind of thinking, it's like, well, then what are you going to do? Not tell stories about people that are raped and like the rape as a thing in the world, because rape happens in the world. And I think what was kind of not nice or cool or interesting, I guess, yeah, what was interesting about the choice to have a rape storyline on Downton Abbey is because you're in that world and you don't think about rape as a thing that happens in a place like Downton Abbey. You know what I mean? Like, I think it showed, and this is kind of interesting to me. It was like, you know, you never would have thought you'd get the storyline on this show, but rape is a part of, you know, this kind of toxic masculine culture that definitely exists on Downton Abbey. And therefore I was like, you know, it's an interesting thing. And I remember she won some awards for performing that storyline. And she said in her speeches, like, it's really important to me to tell the story because this happens to women and has happened to women for many centuries.
So I think another thing is that at that time I was watching Sons of Anarchy, which mm-hmm. was a show I also gave up on because it was silly. But I just watched the season where Katie Sagal's character, like, it was a season long arc about her, like, dealing with the rape. And it was like, really, I thought she was incredible in that show. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a very, like, it was shocking. It was like, and I felt like it dealt with relationships well, and I really believe everything she was going through, which is really scary. And then that I watched Downton Abbey and it was happening. I was like, I can't.
And you think it just wasn't? Well,
I was like, I can't go. And this is like, I'm saying this, and I'm admitting this is like privileged and fucking shit. But I was like, I can't go through that as a viewer again. Which, you know what? The moment I say that, I think I should get. I'll take criticism for that take.
I don't think that's privileged of you. Because it's, if you didn't feel like it was being dealt with sensitively, and you can choose what you watch.
Also, I mean, like, it does not make you privileged to say, I don't want, as a viewer, to experience this sort of amplifying this thing that I'm already sort of processing.
Because it does feel like sometimes it's on every fucking show. Yeah. And then you think to yourself, like, all right. You have to ask the question, like, are we doing this to inform and expose, or are we doing this to fucking entertain people? And if I'm watching a rape storyline to be entertained, which a lot of times that is why you watch television shows, is to be entertained. And if you're finding that that's part of your entertainment, there's nothing wrong with removing yourself from that. Like,
There was an art. Was it Emily Nussbaum that was talking about there? I feel like I read some article about this recently about.
Love Nussbaum, I just want to say.
What was the article dealing with?
You know, I think it was actually, I don't remember what it was. I feel like it was interviewing some female showrunners saying, like, we get so many spec scripts that, like, from men that are rape scripts.
Basically.
Wow. Yep. And then we get so many, and so, like, a rule of ours is that we just, and if that's in any of them, we don't look at it anymore.
Wow, that's
it's like a trend. It's become a trend of, like, screenwriters.
It's the same thing with, like, it's now, and this is scary, like, what, like, so, like, soaps were doing in the 2000s with cancer, where it just felt like a matter of fucking time until there was, like, going to be, like, a cancer storyline. We were going to go through that for 18 episodes. It's like, now it's moved on to they doing that with rape. People, and it's, like, not the same fucking thing.
People even write in, like, casual jokes about this meta story. Like, in the outs, the show, one character has this line that goes, so what did you do last night? Oh, I was just watching that show on HBO where they're terrible to women. Oh, True Detective? No. The Jinx? No. Game of Thrones? Mm-hmm. No. Like, just listing basically every HBO show, and it applied, and it, like, worked as a joke, and it was just awful and whatever.
But, it's, you know, pretty, it's rough.
Like, it is like, it's everywhere, and I don't blame Tim for wanting to, like, disengage from Downton just because it was, like, so much to process.
Saying I don't blame Tim is
huge.
It's my Red Bull. It's giving me wings.
Okay, I will say this. Tim, I've told you this, but this was, like, fresh after the election.
Oh, yeah.
I think this was the weekend of. I was doing this show at Over the Eight, Rest in Peace. And Mitra and I were doing this show there.
Man,
it was so sad. A bunch of great people were there, but we were just all so sad, and none of us were funny. I was like, Anna Fabrega was there, Elise Morales was there. Everyone was great, but, like, we were just not delivering. So anyway, Mitra and I are walking home, and this was right after the whole debate about the safety pins was happening. It was like, should people be wearing them? Shouldn't they? And then Mitra and I were both like, it's such a stupid bullshit nonsense discussion that's happening.
Yeah,
blah 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 blah, and like. Eventually, and, like, forgive me for saying this, but eventually, like, we were just like, but you know what? The only people who are having this argument, who are saying that you shouldn't wear safety pins, are white people. And then we just, like, had this whole run about how white people are terrible, blah, 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 blah. And then we ran into Tim, and then we said, oh, Tim, you're one of the good ones. And then we split off from Tim. We had this beautiful conversation. And then Mitra just goes, I just fucking love that we have that power to say who's good and who's not. It was kind of it's a monstrous yet funny moment to me. I don't know. Yeah. Tim is one of the good ones.
I have to say, I can't accept. I cannot accept. If you accept.
If you accept, then you are.
Am I one of the good ones?
Matt, I think if we're going to bury the hatchet, then yes, you are.
I can't accept.
Ah! That's right. You can't.
It can't accept.
Tim is so right. It can't accept. Otherwise, it is part of the problem.
Because I remember you guys said that to me, and I was like, if...
This
if
is
you,
a test.
If you said that test. To any moment, if you said to any person from my college, everyone, that's like... Everyone's
the dream.
Everyone in my college is wet dream.
Oberlin, by the way.
Oberlin,
yes.
Oberlin baby.
Which, can I just say right now, first of all, I'll say this right
probably
now.
Probably the fucking stud of Oberlin.
Yeah.
He told me he almost hooked up with his RA.
Oh, Tim. Come on.
Spill tea.
No, we don't have to do this. Don't
Can't
make
talk.
Him do this.
Can't talk.
We might have to cut this out.
Here's what I'll say. I went to Oberlin. I enjoy Oberlin. This is like a school that does not deserve national attention.
I don't think any of them do.
And so here's the thing. There's a lot of, I feel like it's become, maybe it was before, but I wasn't aware of it, but I feel like Oberlin has become like a sort of a part of the culture wars in a way, like a part of like an example of college students gone awry or example of colleges gone awry. And there's many examples of that, which I would be like, yeah, I think that's ridiculous. Oh yeah, I think that stuff. But like, it's a school of 3,000 people, mm-hmm. like in Ohio, which by the way, I have a connection to Ohio.
Yeah.
I'm not saying oh, fuck Ohio, but it's like a small school in isolation of like a lot of things. It shouldn't be a national story. Like, things that are going on in Oberlin should not be in the New York Times. And
that's
more
fair.
Than any other school. You know, because like, I feel sure. the stuff that's happening there is happening at, like, I don't know, Bates or like Reed, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it does make me feel weird when that school has become this, like, maybe I'm just more sensitive to it because I went there, but like,
going to feel a connection to whatever anyone says about the school that you went to.
Yeah.
It is a little personal.
But am I wrong to say that it's become one of those buzzwords, but like a label.
Sure.
You know?
It's in a post, you know, Lena Dunham world.
It's I think Oberlin, where did you go? Makes a lot of sense.
Like, Oberlin carries a lot of this weird stigma that's probably not deserved.
Yeah.
Or it's just become this pincushion. Yeah.
I mean,
sure.
Bowen and I went to NYU, and I think that's the school with the A, biggest target on its back, and B, it's on the biggest pedestal. It's like both. And honestly, whenever anyone talks about NYU, I only am down to fucking make cracks and jokes about NYU now.
Yeah,
I'm not interested in defending it anymore. I really don't feel connected to it.
I never felt like I defended it, really.
I did, but without knowing what I was talking about. Like, when people were coming for, like, John Sexton for, you know,
buying
misusing money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, I was like, no, he's actually a nice guy.
Oh, because you worked with him.
I worked with him. And he was a nice guy. He is a nice guy. And he was very generous, but that doesn't mean that what he was doing wasn't fucked up. I mean, I went to one of those houses that allegedly was, like, they used school money for. Like, it was, and looking back on what that was, it's crazy. It's insane. And then he resigned, and he should have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So whenever anyone talks about NYU, I'm just like, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to feel bad about going there because, I wanted to go there, and, like, what we got out of it, I think, was great, which is the connections and, like, being in the city. What's great about NYU, man, is the connections.
Okay.
I mean, hey, I'll say that. When I moved here, I was like, I had a chip in my shoulder of people I met through NYU.
Yeah, I know,
like,
you did.
You guys, yeah, I talked about it.
Yeah.
I talked about it. I don't have a problem talking about it. Here's where I'm a hypocrite.
Come for me, you bitch.
I'll come for you. You guys all knew each other. You knew what the institutions were. You knew what was happening. You were able to see younger comedians and older comedians figuring themselves out before anyone else did. And
for
so
sure.
And then I got here, I was like, what's going on? And all these people like, knew what was going on. I was like, fuck. And I had friends.
It was definitely cool to be close to, like,
yeah. I will say this, I still felt like, this does not absolve me of anything, but I still felt like I was in my NYU bubble right after, like, I didn't take my first UCB class
for at least 2.5 years.
Yeah,
I didn't stay in the NYU bubble. Yeah.
I didn't take my first UCB class until the summer after college.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, finally I'll break out of the Washington Square Park area, you know.
Mm. And also, sometimes I wonder, like, what it would have been like to actually go to a school that wasn't in New York and then have moved to New York, because that's like going to college again. You know what I mean? But this time, you don't have the built-in community. You do have to fucking figure it out. You, like, How did you meet people when you moved here?
Story Pirates.
Yeah.
Story Pirates.
Story Pirates.
That was huge even for us,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, huge for me, too.
I will say is the most positive comedy community in New York.
Yeah, that. Definitely.
And I feel like I've dipped toes in many different comedy communities.
You
and
have,
I think
you
Story
have.
Pirates is the most positive.
Wow. If you don't know what Story Pirates is, you should log on to storypirates.org or look up the Story Pirates on YouTube and just watch some of the videos. It's like an arts education collective, and it's based in New York and Los Angeles. And basically, we take stories that are written by children, elementary school age kids, and make them into sketch shows and musical numbers and stuff, and perform them for the kids. And it's really motivating, and it's great. And I met Tim, mm-hmm, and fell in love with Tim instantly when I met him because he did object work digging, and I was like, that's him.
Tim, when I first met Tim was also
he was a
Story
penguin
Pirates.
That had to go across the ocean.
Mm. I first met Tim through Story Pirates too, and just seeing him as one of he was a year older than my class.
Yeah,
but he was at that point that I was already in the cast. He was so sharp and good and just
yeah, you're
with
a good
it.
Story Pirate.
And
thank
I was like,
you.
Wow,
really
that guy
are.
Is really
thank
fucking
you.
Funny. And I wasn't, and I've said this to Tim before, was very intimidated by him.
Yeah, same.
Yeah,
that's so funny to me because you guys were so good. Off see, because I like. I know. I felt like
it's a very specific performance style because you have to perform for kids, so it's very
yes.
like you're like a flat character, you know.
Right,
you're,
yeah.
you have a living cartoon.
Yes, and I feel like both of you were like so instantly perfect at it.
That's because we are living cartoons.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you want to talk about culture, we want to talk about what culture inspired you. We want to talk about cartoons.
Oh there you
I wanna go,
baby.
Back to, I'm going to go all the way back to The Mask.
The Mask.
Ooh, yeah.
That movie changed my life.
Yes.
Jim Carrey is a beast.
And I saw it, and I was like, oh, I want to be an actor because I saw that movie, and I was like, oh, a human can be a cartoon?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, what's he doing? Oh, he's acting? Okay, like that's what
people
I
don't
do.
Count that as acting.
That
I
is
feel,
exactly
you know?
Right because Tim and I have had lengthy conversations mm-hmm. about Jim Carrey specifically
mm-hmm.
and about what just as a kid you watch him in Ace Ventura and I was as a kid was like he is the funniest person
oh,
in the world.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Him in Ace Ventura, him in I mean my favorite one and this is like grounded for him, but was Liar Liar.
Oh yeah. Yeah
to
yeah,
me
yeah.
Liar Liar is one of the best performances ever, and I think it's the first hint you get that he's actually a great dramatic actor.
The pen scene
is unbelievable. Just what happens the entire movie, and then the moment when he's like, I'm not a good father, and he realizes that he said it
yeah.
like that to me was like the first hint that you what actually is there under Jim Carrey is like actually like an iconic level
yeah.
talent.
You know what? My parents knew I loved Jim Carrey,
yeah.
and so they took me to see Man on the Moon in theaters.
Yeah,
which was like I didn't know who Andy Kaufman was. Like
wow.
who was this dude? They just knew I loved Jim Carrey,
yeah.
and like, and that movie also changed my life.
I
was
imagine.
Introduced by this dude who's like now one of my you know inspirations.
Yeah,
and did you ever saw that movie?
I
haven't seen Man on the
no.
Moon.
So the opening of it is him as Andy doing the credits, and he goes like, I can't do his voice, but he goes like, oh, usually you see credits in the end of the movie, but they're always boring, so now we're going to do it at the beginning. And then he like puts on a record, and the credits go in the beginning, and from then I'm just like, whoa, like, you can like fuck with the form. Like,
yeah,
no,
oh
I mean,
God.
Which as a kid is really important to see exemplified.
Mm-hmm.
That is huge.
Yeah,
I love
I'm
that.
So
I
happy
love
that.
That
we haven't talked about Jim Carrey on the podcast, have we?
Jim Carrey is truly one of the first inspirations.
Oh,
know,
yeah.
He's. I mean, he's,
just watching him in interviews where he would just like make these fucking crazy faces and I would be like,
the best.
And do you see like old videos of him when he's just an impressionist? Not, but like before he was even a stand-up, he was just an impressionist.
Uh-huh.
And before he would do an impression, he would like wrinkle his face. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
He would like wrinkle his face sort of just like to get into it. It was, and it's sort of like him like flexing a little bit because it was him just like showing how much control he had.
Yeah.
I think I read some article where he like when I was a kid, maybe it was in like Disney Adventure magazine or something like that, where he was like, oh yeah, I'd make faces in the mirror as a kid. And I was like, all right, then I'm gonna do that too.
Yeah.
He to me is the epitome of commitment and energy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's unrivaled in those two areas. Like even when you see him come on like an award show now and he has to like do a bit. He kills.
He kills it. He kills it.
He kills.
Yeah.
And no one is like that.
No. I think he will be very, very – his legacy will be a very good one. I mean, even now, it's like you look back at his career. I mean, like Truman Show. Yeah.
Truman
Show. As soon as Truman Show and like Eternal Sunshine came out, I was just like, this guy is fucking nuts.
Just like amazing performances. Truman Show, Man on the Moon, I assume.
The movie is
the
okay.
The Grinch.
I never saw The Grinch.
Amazing performance. Amazing. We have talked about The Grinch on Sudi's episode.
We talked about Faith Hill. We did not talk about Jim Carrey.
The page me. Press the star key.
Okay, I'll see the.
What will I wear?
Oh, we've quoted that line before.
What will I wear? You gotta see The Grinch.
I'll see The Grinch.
You gotta see The Grinch because not only is he giving an amazing performance, but also like a lot of people are.
Okay.
Like, it's like Bill Irwin is in it. He's so good as the mayor of Whoville. Christine Baranski is the next in.
Oh, Christine Baranski.
She's like putting up her lights. She's
and Cindy like the Lou, hot woman. Cindy Lou, who's that?
Taylor Momsen.
Taylor Momsen.
I'll see The Grinch.
See The Grinch.
I'll see The Grinch.
Seasonally, it's not appropriate anymore, but still see it.
Yeah.
Seasonally. I don't
Culturally, it's important.
I'll see a Christmas movie in the summer.
Ooh.
Dude, you're honestly wild.
I like actually don't give a fuck.
Oh my God.
Disgusting.
Oh, shit. Time to drop into 10, guys. Mm. At this time to drop into 10. So, guys, listen. I want to know, Tim, what have you seen this year? What's coming up for the Oscars that you're like, hell yeah. Are you tuned in? Because I want to keep this a part of the podcast because they're coming up.
Okay. I feel like I haven't really seen that many movies recently. What are the best pictures? I mean, you know what? The last movie I saw was Moana. If we want to get into it.
Oh, I don't think so. No. I don't know.
Moana's a trigger word for me.
I don't want to get into it. I will say.
Did you like it?
I did like it. I loved it.
We talked about this, actually.
We talked about this.
You know, I was very bored by Moana, and that's just the reason why I didn't like it very much is because it bored me. I thought that it could have been better based on the standards of other Disney movies I've seen and just been swept away by. That's my only problem with it. It bored me.
Matt and I, we saw it together, and the reprise of How Far I'll Go was so moving and
amazing.
So beautiful. It just lifted us up, and then it just sort of left us hanging for the rest of the movie. I think that was my issue.
It's frustrating when you see a movie that's capable of so much.
Then,
like, it just doesn't deliver that throughout.
I see that. Yeah. For me, I was with it the whole time. I thought it looked beautiful. I thought all the music was great. I was like, I was laughing that dumbass rooster. I love that little thing.
I've come around on the rooster.
It should have been the pig.
This is the thing. I used to say it should have been the pig, but the fact that it should have been the pig and it was the rooster is what's so great.
I think that's
the subversion that I was looking for in the movie, because I was like, where was the subversion? Which was a dumb thing to say looking back.
No, I think it's
I just didn't like the movie. But
I think it's so funny that up top you see this cute pig is made such a big part of it, and you're like, oh, I'm so ready for this pig sidekick.
I know, he was cracking me up.
And then it's like, well, oh, who's in here with me? Like, it's gotta be the pig. And then it's like
the dumbass rooster.
Okay.
I will say this, but here's what, because I said this in the thread about Moana, because I think the first song in that movie is like so wonderful, and yes. I haven't seen a song like that in a Disney movie where it's like, oh, I love where I'm from.
Yes.
I want to have more,
yeah,
but I still
great.
Love where I'm from. And it's usually like, you know, this little town sucks, you know?
No, and I love how that song, you're right, Tim, I completely agree. I love how that song frames responsibility in a very positive way, and she as a protagonist is receiving that and saying, yes, I am going to be a leader, this is what I have to do, and she's not like, it's not a spiteful thing at all. Yeah.
And no one leaves, that's right, we stay.
I liked so much of the music. I liked You're Welcome.
You're Welcome,
I liked
was
You're Welcome
great
too.
Great charm song.
And I really liked the when the grandmother returns as a spirit, spoiler, yeah. And she's like, you remember what I have told you?
Yeah.
And she's like, I am the daughter of the island. And then the last thing is, I am a woman.
I also love her. Tomatoa hasn't always been this glam.
I know. Can I tell you something? I hated that
song. I think you have a good point. That is like,
why is it happening?
Yeah. That it doesn't need, it's like it's a screenplay moment, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't need to be there, but I think that song and that vocal performance is like fucking cool.
From Jermaine.
And but also, like, it's up my alley, you know? It's that.
Yeah, it's such a, it was this, such a Tim Platt moment. I don't saw, fucking, saw it, and I was like, this is Tim.
Don't give me the Hawana. Don't give me the How Far I'll Go reprise, and then give me that crab singing.
Look. I think it's no what thanks. Matt has this relationship with Frozen where we saw it together in the theater, didn't love it, but then you saw it again with kids or in another context, got on board with it. I think I will give Moana another shot.
It's not that I love Frozen and therefore everything else is disqualified. I just
that's not what
think,
I'm saying.
But that is like a feeling that is out there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, it wasn't as good as Frozen. It's like that's like a sentiment, which is like, you got to choose either Tangled or Frozen, which is like a fun conversation to have, but like not one I actually believe. But I do think there's this thing out there which is like, ugh, the people that like Frozen and the people that don't like Frozen. And the people that like Frozen, like, people assume that we think it's the best fucking thing ever. Yeah. Because it did do so unbelievably well. I just think Frozen is great because it took a step forward for me in terms of what those Disney movies could be. And it eventually ended up being a love story between the sisters. I get if, like, the movie bored you and, like, you know, the Let It Go sequence is the only good sequence. I understand people saying that. I just, you know, preferred the creative, innovative way that the storytelling went.
Okay, as someone who doesn't care for Frozen or Moana, I just want to say, one of the best movies, full stop, is Wreck-It Ralph. Everyone must see it.
You said this. I didn't see this.
You haven't seen it yet?
I haven't. I want to see it.
Tim, I think it's going to blow your mind. Okay.
I also want to see Joel posted about storks being better than Zootopia. And I don't know if that was a joke
or not.
I
think it must
be. I don't believe him. I do want to see Sing because I've heard great things about Sing.
I want to see Sing too because there's music in it because I'm allergic to any animated movies that doesn't have any music except Monsters, Inc. I love Monsters, Inc.
I just saw Zootopia.
It's allergic.
I just saw Zootopia. And I thought that was good. I thought that was a good movie.
I liked the movie, but people were really just,
it didn't hit the heights that it was, that people were telling me about.
That's
it.
What I was expecting a lot
but
of
I
it.
Enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it as well.
So Joel was joking about storks?
No, I think he must generally, we'll follow up with Joel.
I don't know. I'm gonna ask him.
I was really excited by that take because I was like, oh, I guess I'll watch storks. Like, I wouldn't have watched, because it's a movie that I feel like I would not have watched, and then it got this glowing response from out of nowhere. And so I was excited. I was excited to be like, oh, I'm going to jump into this thing.
You know what? Yeah. Three of us can go see storks together.
I would like that.
Do another 10?
It's time to do another 10. And while you're doing that 10, it's time for everyone to get ready for the signature, honey.
Oh, I'm not ready.
Moment.
I'm taking off my
glasses. In every Las Culturistas episode, it's I Don't Think So, Honey. And this is our opportunity here on Las Culturistas to take that one thing that's really been pushing our proverbial buttons and rail against it for 1 minute on the clock. Now, both our guests, Tim and Bowen, have their heads in their hands and they're stressed. What's going on?
I just don't know. This is truly the most unprepared. Like, even off the cuff.
Because you're just so happy in your life?
No, it's just that I feel like I've really just directed my frustration and my I don't think so honeyness at a lot of different things. And I don't know if I'm running out. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
how about you start, Matt?
I would like to start because I do have one.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. So I'll set the clock for you.
And I'd like open hearts and open minds if that's okay.
Depends.
You know
it
what?
Depends.
I grant you that. But that alone.
Here we go.
Okay. This is Matt Rogers. I Don't Think So, Honey. Time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. The Starbucks that are popping up all over the city that put a lot of their money into their aesthetic and not on more seats. Come on. We need more seats in Starbucks. If I go to a Starbucks or if I live near a Starbucks, I want to be able to sit down, bitch. I want to be able to go there and use the Wi-Fi. Hello, bitch. I just moved into an apartment with my boyfriend, Henry, who's a lovely, amazing person. But you know what? Sometimes he's teaching a lesson and needs to be on the keys, tinkling away. He's a musician. He's loud. And I would like to go to a Starbucks and be able to sit down, but no, you put your budget into the fucking walls being made out of like oak. I don't think so, honey. I need a fucking seat. How come there's 4 seats in here and fucking 8 lamps? I don't need more lamps, bitch. I need somewhere to sit. Also, make it easier for me to log into your Wi-Fi, goddammit. How come it takes me like no time to fucking get my venti drink, but 15, 20 minutes to stand into the Wi-Fi. If you know anything, Starbucks, you know that people use you to sit down and hang out as much as they do for drinks. I don't think so, honey. Change.
Okay, and oh that's gosh. 1 minute.
That was one of my best ones ever.
That was really, really? Good. That was really good.
You covered a lot. Because
I feel like I made my point, and I feel like now there'll be a change. That's I measure my I don't think so, honey, and do I think after the fact that something will change?
Yes.
And I think
this is what Matt. There. This is what Matt does to enact and you know, effect change in lieu of having senators who are in opposition of him. Is that right?
You know, like, what? Yes, I am from New York, born and raised, and therefore, like, I call my senators, and they're like, "Yeah, I know. Yeah, I also am outraged at the same." But
now you have a place.
I have a place to put my anger, and it's Starbucks.
Yes. That said, it's important to call senators about specifics.
Yes.
Because
We were just joking.
Because I want to say that
it's also nice to say thank you. I tweeted at Kirsten Gillibrand, and I said thank you because I thank her. I think she's the fucking best. She's a rock star.
And Tim
and Schumer too.
Tim, we finished that thought.
Because with all the stuff that's happening, it's like very easy to call and just be like, protect us from Trump, you know?
Yes.
But like, it's so much helpful to be like, oh, like,
do that
through it.
No. ACA. Like,
saying all of the people that you have a problem with, the specific bills you have a problem with,
mm-hmm. yeah.
is very, I think it's good. It's good for you and it's good for them.
Yes.
Ugh, every time I talk about this stuff, I feel like I'm just like reciting things I've read,
but then you get your own vocabulary for it, and that's when you break through.
Because I feel like I haven't been emotional. I've heard you talk about being emotional on the phone with your senators and representatives, and I feel like I'm still very much like I'm gonna read this script. Thank you. Like
right.
I feel like I don't know. I feel like I'm talking to like my teacher's mom or something like that.
Here's what it feels like. That
if this helps. I usually don't read from a script, but I will like pour over some, get a sense of what I want to say, and then I will physically. This sounds weird, but it's just because it's like the only place at work where I can do this in privacy. Is I will go to the back and just go into the darkest corner and feel physically sort of just like I have to really just surround myself with what, like, I don't know, with something that matches the sentiment or whatever, and then I'll just go into. I'm never angry. I'm never emotional, I should say. I get just a little snippy, but appropriately and politely so.
Mm.
Mm.
Like today I called, famously, my representative snuck out of a town hall meeting.
That was your representative?
That was my representative from my district. And I called his office today, and one of his staffers, very nice guy, took a message from me, and I said, "Hi, I just want to say that I think it's unfortunate that Congressman Kaufman left his own town hall meeting. But if he's afraid of a hostile reception, I just think he needs to see that as a way of his constituents holding him accountable. So I would encourage him to really have more face time with the people he represents." And that's all I have to say. Like, that was just a more tame way of me to just be like, "Hey, that was fucking stupid. Why did you do that?"
Yeah.
You know, there's always like a positive way to frame that. Okay. Anyway.
Do you need more time or should Tim go?
No, I can go.
Okay.
Okay.
I have one, but I don't like want to do that one.
Sure. No. Oh, it doesn't matter. I just came up with mine. And this is the beauty of I Don't Think So, Honey. I told Tim this, you know, the less significant.
Sometimes it's nice to, and we whip out our improv backgrounds. And Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey starts right now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, Uber drivers who do not stop at where the designated place marker on your map is. There is a reason that the user is able to designate the pickup spot. And I will do my best, and Matt can vouch for this, and Tim can vouch for this. I will do my best to go to the exact spot where the pin is dropped. And honey, these drivers don't know their way around city blocks and cities they're supposed to be familiar with, that they're being paid to be familiar with. And honey, they ask me what routes to go, and oh, don't even get me started. I Don't Think So, Honey, on drivers, taxi drivers, Uber drivers, whatever, who ask you to navigate for them. Oh, that is unacceptable. Download Waze for your phone. Download any app for your phone. This is unacceptable. I Don't Think So, Honey, drivers who are not good at their jobs, I will give you a 2-star rating. I will never give you a 1-star rating unless you slap me in the fucking face. But I Don't Think So, Honey, drivers who do not respect this transaction of them knowing their way around the goddamn city, bitch. I Don't Think So, honey Uber drivers named Jordan or whatever, or Greg. I've had bad Gregs, and they are bad drivers.
That's 1 minute.
Gregs are bad drivers.
I think this is the first time in the podcast history that Matt hasn't interrupted Bowen's "I Don't Think So, Honey."
Yes.
You know?
That's like really shady of you to say, Tim, especially in lieu of recent conflicts.
Well, it might
what? Be. I just feel like last episode, I mean, you were.
That's because I would. That's because my personality and character was being attacked live.
It was just really nice to see you hold your tongue for once. And that was really. Yes. I hope you'll take that one forward.
Well, I hope that I continue to do that throughout this podcast. I hope that I do that today.
His behavior is corrective.
I don't think so, honey. I don't.
You know, I think you're gonna do fine. Five more push-ups. I think you're gonna do fine. I think you do such a good job.
You do 10 push-ups, or else you're gonna be fucked up. All right, your arms are gonna be uneven and fucked up.
I have one that I'm happy with.
Okay, great. Okay, I wasn't all the. Can I just say I wasn't all the way happy with mine?
That's fine, Bowen. I don't think so, honey. Tim Platt starts right now.
I don't think so, honey. Coffee shops where when I ask you if there's Wi-Fi and you say yes, there's Wi-Fi, and I get a coffee and I get a pastry and I sit down and I open up my laptop and there's no Wi-Fi, and I go up and I say there's no Wi-Fi, and they go, yeah, well, I guess it's not working. Why did you tell me there was Wi-Fi when I bought with my own money coffee and I set up a space? I could get coffee and pastry anywhere with Wi-Fi. That's why I bought the coffee. I bought a ticket to Wi-Fi and you said your ticket is accepted, and then I got to the fucking sign and it turns out it was a steel ticket and you couldn't rip in half and give me my half back. Now I'm stuck there. What am I gonna do? Free write on a fucking Word document? No. I wanna do Writer Duet. No. I wanna use Spotify. No. I wanna Facebook when I get a little bit bored of writing. And you betrayed me. And I should get my money back, and you should give me a free pastry next time.
1 minute. That was the most monstrous "I don't think so, honey." Yes,
I loved it. It was.
I loved it. You took it in a whole new direction.
Every part of that was Tim Platt.
It has been rebranded.
Had to be me.
That was amazing. You know what? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
It does drive me insane.
Happens all the time.
And it's a thing where it's like, yeah, of course. Like, it's nothing. It's like one of those like true. Like, what am I gonna? If I complain about this, I would be a monster. You know, if I was like. Mm-hmm.
But also,
you. That's why you spent the money there.
Exactly.
You know.
Oh, it's a con.
It's insane. That's part of the deal. And that's a problem I have with Starbucks too. Mm-hmm. Why, when I go in there, do I have to answer a goddamn questionnaire when I get to get into your Wi-Fi?
You don't have to. Well, Matt, that's because you don't have to answer
no,
the question.
No, I think you have to fill out a test.
Okay.
Have to do a test. Guys, 10 more push-ups as we sail out here. Guys, Tim, we're going to be on your show.
Yes.
Sloop Jumbly.
Sloop Jumbly on Wednesday the 25th at the Brick Theater at 8 p.m. Peter Mills Weiss and Lorelai Ramirez and I are hosting Sloop Jumbly, and it's a great show because we like to bring performers from different performance worlds. Like, we have like a writer and playwright who's reading. Mm-hmm. We have a comedian. What's it? Oh fuck. We also have Cocoon Dance
yes,
Team.
Cocoon
Dance. We have people from different performance worlds, and it's very exciting. And Sluck is going to be there.
Of course,
Marie Faustine.
Bowen and I will be performing as Sluck at Sloop Jumbly.
And we have not performed as Sluck in a minute.
In some time. So you know what? The kids are thirsty for Sluck.
And, oh God, I just want to say I love that name, Sloop Jumbly. I love
Sloop Jumbly. Bastardization
of
life.
A Beach Boys song.
Yes, so Peter and Lorelai and I were meeting, and we were like on the kick of like doing songs with reference that were like slanted. Uh-huh. And I said, "Oh, Sloop Jumbly," and we laughed. And then I was like, "There's
that's
no way." And both
such
Peter and Lorelai were
that's
like,
how,
"No, we're doing Sloop."
That's how Las Culturistas got its name. I was like, "What if it's called Las Culturistas?" And Bohm was like, "That's so stupid," and just laughed. And then I was like, "Well, we have to do it."
And then that was how we knew. Hmm. So that's an origin.
If you
story
laugh
for
at
it,
it, you should marry it. All right, guys. I want to tell one quick story before we go.
Okay.
So me and my high school best friend, Ken, were playing volleyball in the backyard. And his little sister, Kathleen, who was 5, was in the garden with her dad. And Kathleen was very, very gregarious. And she said, "I love tomatoes." Aww. And the dad said, "Well, if you love tomatoes so much, why don't you marry it?" Because he had like a goofy sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And Kathleen said, "Well, because you know you can't dance with it." That's and that's beautiful. Why I love kids. Everyone look up Story Pirates.
Guys, our thanks to Tim Platt. Tim, they can find you on social media on Instagram at I Am King Bozo. On Twitter?
Twitter is just Timothy Platt.
Timothy Platt.
I'm on Facebook at Tim Platt, but I took Facebook off my phone, so I won't be the most responsive little boy.
Yes. That's very good.
Tumblr, I love gift cards at tumblr.com.
Tim, we love you so much. Thank you so much
for
coming
on. I love you both
so much. We're going to kiss you, Tim.
This is Bowen Yang.
And this is Matt Rogers. This is the Last Culturistas podcast. Thanks forever, dog, and thank you. Bye.
Bye, Tim.
Forever. Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more podcasts, please visit ForeverDogProductions.com.